The old saying that everybody loves a lover is an exaggeration. If it were true, I would have loved Maggie and Egbert, but I didn't. I came across this young couple last Sunday on a ferry on Sydney Harbour. My wife and I were taking Uncle Fred from Melbourne on a sightseeing cruise. With most of the passengers, we looked out of the windows while a guide described points of interest. I noticed a young man and girl, however, who did not look out the windows. They only had eyes for each other. They were Egbert and Maggie. She was wearing mauve matador pants and he was in a two-tone sports coat. The guide's voice said over the loudspeaker, "That island is Pinchgut, where they used to send convicts to live on bread and water." Egbert, who had an arm around Maggie, gave her a pinch. She squeaked and said, "Cut it out, Eggie." I thought they might be familiar with this part of the harbour and would show more interest in the scenery later on. But this was not the case. "Here we have Long Nose Point," said the guide. "It's got its name from that large rock shaped like a nose." Maggie and Egbert, who were gazing into each other's eyes, rubbed noses together. "Afternoon tea is now being served," the voice continued, "but the romantic pair didn't seem to want refreshments." As we approached Hunter's Hill, they started wrestling. "This district is noted for its colonial houses and old world charm," the guide remarked. Egbert put a headlock on Maggie and she bit him playfully on the hand. My nephew, age 7, asked, "What are that man and lady fighting for?" "It's only a sort of game," I said. I did not pursue the subject further. Going up the Parramatta River, they quietened down a bit. Egbert lay with his head on Maggie's lap while she fed him peanuts. But before long he sat up again. He tickled Maggie all the way from Callan Park Mental Hospital to the Mortlake Gasworks. On the way home they played handies, ruffled each other's hair, and had a series of football scrums. They looked up for the first time with surprise when the boat got back to the wharf at Circular Quay. Why do married couples like Maggie and Egbert bother to go on sightseeing trips? I suppose at least you must give them the credit for making their own fun. Hello, this is Lionel Hartley. Those of you who heard my recent radio program entitled Divorce, A Biblical View will remember me saying, before divorce or separation, try marriage. Many people are wedded, but they are not truly married. A wedding is not the same as a marriage. A wedding is the uniting of two people. A marriage is the uniting of two persons. Archibald Hart described it as the union of two incompatible people in an impossible relationship with the task from God to turn it into something beautiful. George Bernard Shaw said, like fingerprints, all marriages are different. Here are 30 different marriage types that I have identified, which may help us to understand our marriage with a view to improving it. They all start with the letter B. Let's begin now. Number one, bad marriages. It's a shame to start with this one, but we're looking at these in alphabetical order. P. Parker said, widows are divided into two classes, the bereaved and the relieved. One woman wrote for her late husband's epitaph, "Here lies my husband, here let him lie, now he's at rest and so am I." Rarely are marriages bad because the people are bad. A bad marriage is usually the result of poor communication. A friend complained to her husband We never go anywhere except sit in front of the TV. He replied, would it help if we change seats? Later in this broadcast, I will talk more about communication, but let's look at the marriage type number two, bearable marriages. Dr. Gordon Moyes wrote, many people live together and outwardly show to the world a stable relationship, but there's not much joy in it. There is a sense of achievement, having survived a rough world for the sake of the children or appearance, but it doesn't have the inner quality of joy and friendship, where each other's company is more enjoyable. I do not think it is too late to improve the quality of an existing marriage, he says. You have the framework, now talk with each other about how you can contribute more to your marriage. Number three, beautiful marriages. The incurable romantic English poet Elizabeth Barrett Browning wrote, how do I love you? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach, when feeling out of sight for the ends of being and ideal grace. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely as men strive for right. I love thee purely as they turn from praise. I love thee with the passion put to use my old griefs and with my childhood faith. I love thee with a love I seem to lose with my lost saints. I love thee with the breadth, smiles, tears of all my life. Beautiful marriages do not just happen. They are made to happen. Number four, becoming marriages. These are marriages in which an attempt is made to change a night owl into a homing pigeon. Sometimes we try and force a change on others instead of considering a change in ourselves. Change is often necessary for growth, but growth that simply adds volume without improving the quality of the relationship is like a body putting on fat. Growth that diminishes the quality of the relationship is like a body being gnawed away by cancer. Sometimes marriages are hindered from becoming marriages due to our attitudes. Journalist Ross Campbell almost facetiously hit upon a truth when he observed, it is a curious fact that men who treat their cars well are often lacking in consideration for their wives. Mr. Hopkins is an example. His car, thanks to his loving attention, is well preserved, but the same could not be said for Mrs. Hopkins. Her husband spends very little on her maintenance, and she looks neglected and shabby. She is not as well upholstered as when they were first married. In the neighbour's opinion, she is depreciating faster than she would if more care was taken for her. Mr. Bunting, on the other hand, though his car looks run down, has a smartly turned out wife. He takes pride in her and has kept her in as new condition. Often I have noticed an owner fusses over his car when he first gets it, but after a while he takes it for granted. He devotes less time to it. His eyes start wandering to younger, better-looking models. To my mind, a man should take a kindly interest in both his car and his wife. With proper attention, a car will give long and loyal service. Likewise, a wife who is well looked after will keep her showroom shine. Number five, benefit marriages. These are marriages which have a favourable influence upon others. St. Paul instructed the young Bishop Titus of Crete to instruct the older women to set an example of godly marriage and to teach the young women to love their husbands and their children. Number six, benign marriages. Listen to this love poem where a wife expresses her need for tangible expressions of caring in order for her marriage to grow. please, come and take my hand. Let's walk. Give me your eyes, saying hi. Glances, saying I care. Handholds that let me know you are only teasing. Hugs, saying thank you for being you. Kisses that gently want me. The love that says, I'll be here tomorrow and every day thereafter. Number 7, berserk marriages. A divorced Marie Tonkin said, if I ever get married again, it would have to be under an anaesthetic. However, Howard Hendricks says, bridges can be built across the most troubled waters when Christ is the motivator. However, St. John of the Cross is reputed to have said, I am not made or unmade by the things which happen to me, but my reactions to them. That is all God cares about. It has been well said, in every circumstance the soul weighed down with grief and care may find support and succour in the unfailing love and power of a covenant-keeping God. Number 8, beveraged marriages. One of the best books I've ever read on alcoholism in marriage was written by a professor of counselling at Johns Hopkins University, Toby Rice Drews. In Getting Them Sober, A Guide to Those Who Live with an Alcoholic, she says, alcoholism is an arrestable disease. It's not like cancer. That means that your partner can stop drinking. The damage to his liver can be arrested. Your marriage can be wonderful again. He can live long and have a productive life. She closes this particular chapter by praying, God, I thank you that alcoholism is a disease for which there is hope. E.G. White put it well when she said, every soul is as fully known to Jesus as if he were the only one for whom the Saviour died. The distress of everyone touches his heart. The cry for aid reaches his ear. He came to draw all men to himself. He is the solution to our every problem. Number 9, biblical marriages. Modelled after the Creator's design, yet society supposes it can improve the picture by breaking the divine frame. In July 1997, I penned these words, Lord, you are the bread of life. Make me, Lord, a slice of thee. My life for me be spirit-filled, the leavening swelling up in me. The silent unseen working, transforming lazy flower into a holy air-filled bubbling life, risen, baked, and given power. So life no longer is a loaf of wasted energy. Lord, may the crumbs I leave behind draw other souls to thee. Number 10, bifurcated marriages. These are marriages which are divided into two branches, forked marriages. Actress Cloris Leachman said, I think husbands and wives should live in separate houses, and if there's enough money, the children should live in a third. A well-known authoress of the early 1900s wrote, if you will seek the Lord and be converted every day, if you will of your own spiritual choice be free and joyous in God, if with gladsome consent, that's happy willingness of heart, to his gracious call you come wearing the yoke of Christ, the yoke of obedience and service, then all your murmurings will be stilled, all your difficulties will be removed, all the perplexing problems that now confront you will be solved. Number 11 is blank marriages. These are marriages which lack communication. A Sydney Rotary Down Under newsletter related the following story. A young actor came home and announced proudly that he had been hired for his first role in a play. I'm going to be a husband who's been married for 25 years, he said. not a bad start," his father replied. "Maybe in your next play you'll get a speaking part." One woman, writing in the Australian Woman's Weekly, shared the following verse: "I know our love is deeper now than ever in our courtship days. Without your telling me, somehow, I feel it in 100 ways. And that's all very well, I guess. Then I remember wistfully how nice it was when you loved me less, but told me so more frequently." Number 12, blasé marriages. A blasé marriage is one which is weary with or tired of pleasure or the seeking of it. If you are cloyed with what the world passes off as pleasure, or weary from seeking elusive joy, then consider the following sad reflection. In an article entitled "Summer Storm" in IPC magazine, Kin Lichener relates the following interchange. A few tables away from them sat a couple who were obviously very much in love. They were continually touching each other, holding hands, snatching clumsy kisses when they thought no one else was watching. Or perhaps they didn't care if they were watched, so wrapped up were they in each other. Kerry sighed romantically. "They must be honeymooners," she said out loud. But Glenn took her aback with a harsh, derisive laugh. "They're not married," he said scornfully. "Or if they are, it's not to each other. Married couples don't carry on like that. The romance dies before the sheets have had time to cool from the wedding night." Number 13 is bleeding marriages. Punch magazine in 1845 had this one-liner: "Advice to persons about to marry, don't." Number 14 is blended marriages. Although the good news about broken people in broken marriages is that almost all separated partners will remarry, the bad news is that most carry the scars of the first marriage into the second. Add to that the complications of step-parenting, child custody, in-laws, blame, and redirected love, it's no wonder second marriages have a higher failure rate than first-timers. Nevertheless, blended families can become beautiful families with a little hard work. Number 14 is blessed marriages. In the classic Shirley Temple movie, The Colonel, the doctor says to the colonel, "Marriage is a wonderful institution," and the reply is, "No family should be without it." Number 15 is blighted marriages. Some marriages have such skeletons in the cupboard that burdens of past blight the present. When Adrian Barrich got married in 1981, he put a personal advertisement in the Canberra Times. The advertisement read, "Adrian B. would like to inform all the girls of his past that he is now married." A week later in the same column, there was this reply: "Adrian Barrick, from the girls in your past, who cares?" An old Italian priest wrote the following lines to one of his flock in the year 1513. "The gloom of the world is but a shadow. Behind it, yet within our reach, is joy. There's reliance and glory in the darkness, could we but see. And to see, we have only to look. I beseech you, look. Life is so generous a giver, but we, judging its gifts by their covering, cast them away as ugly or heavy or hard. But remove the covering, and you'll find beneath it a living splendour woven of love, by wisdom with power. Welcome it, grasp it, and you touch the angel's hand that brings it to you. Everything we call a trial, a sorrow, a duty, believe me, that angel's hand is there, the gift is there, and the wonder of an overshadowing presence. Life is so full of meaning and purpose, so full of beauty beneath its covering, You'll find that earth but cloaks your heaven. Courage, then, to claim it, that's all. But courage you have, and the knowledge that we are pilgrims together, wending through an unknown country home. And so I greet you with the prayer for you now and forever, that as the day breaks, that the shadows flee away. Number 15, blind marriages. A blind marriage is one in which the partners just don't know where they're going. An anonymous writer once said, "Marriage doesn't consist in gazing at each other, it is looking outward together in the same direction." Sometimes it is one partner that is blind. Phyllis Royce Respond in the Reader's Digest said, "My husband was enjoying a day off work and watched me scurry about the house. I picked up his dirty clothes, put away his work shoes, carried out his coffee cup and biscuit plate from the previous night's football viewing, washed the breakfast dishes, wiped up the coffee he had spilt and ironed his shirts. Seeing a thoughtful look on his face, I wondered if he was beginning to realise just how much unnecessary work he had created for me. Maybe he would offer to help. 'A penny for your thoughts,' I said. 'I was thinking,' he replied, 'that one of the things I like best about you is how you always find ways to keep yourself busy.'" Another woman writer perceives the blindness this way. "A woman gets up in the morning, puts a load of washing on, pays the newspaper bill on the way to work, makes a quick call to book a holiday, ducks out at lunchtime to get a few groceries, books the car in for a service, rings the man to tell him she has booked the holiday and the car for its service, calls the couple they're having for dinner on Saturday night to check what time they should arrive, stops by the locksmith on the way home to get some keys cut for the new cleaning woman, waters the pot plant, takes the washing out and soaks it, hangs up the jacket the man wore yesterday, and puts the supper on. When they sit down to eat, the man asks her if she had a chance to get his mother a birthday card." Number 16 is bloodthirsty marriages. "Love rules without a sword and builds without a cord. It flourishes with warmth but crumbles with a whip." Swinburne said, "Laurel is green for a season and love is sweet for a day, but love grows bitter with treason and the laurel outlives not May." About 200 years ago, a well-known encyclopedia discussed the word atom, using only four lines, but devoted five full pages to an explanation of love. A recent edition of the same encyclopedia devotes five full pages to explaining the word atom, including a mention of the bomb, but has omitted the word love entirely. Number 17, borderline marriages. Kathy Letty, in Today Tonight on Channel 7, said, "Most men I know think monogamy is something a dining room table is made out of." Dorothy Parker penned, "Women want monogamy. Man delights in novelty. Love is woman's moon and sun. Man has other forms of fun. Woman lives, but in her lord count to ten, and the man is bored. With this the gist and sum of it, what earthly good can come of it?" While the Bible is highly optimistic about the possibility of positive change occurring in our lives, it cautions us against any attempt at a quick fix. Prayer is, I believe, a realistic approach. Prayer itself is a miracle in the biblical understanding. A miracle not that God answers prayer, God is in the business of answering prayer. The miracle is that the person prays in the first place. While we cannot accurately predict how God will answer our prayer, we can be confident that things will be better because we have prayed and because we have opened ourselves fully to that provision. Number 18, boring marriages. Before this marriage, the man will lie awake all night thinking about what you said, after marriage, he falls asleep before you have finished saying it. David Price Loney's in Owls and Satyrs wrote, "When you're bored with yourself, marry and be bored with someone else." Jerome and Julie Rayner talk of the need for variety and intimacy. What has happened, they say, in many loving marriages is that this most intimate aspect of their relationship, they have actually lost true intimacy, falling into the same familiar pattern each time. It is as though they had limited their speech to each other to a vocabulary of only 10 words. There's not much people can say to each other in only 10 words, whether the language is verbal or the language of love. It is sadly through boredom that some men wander from the home. Deborah McKinley put it rather explicitly when she mused, "Sometimes a woman marries a man she loves very much. She cooks for him, buys him little treats, gives him a back rub when he's feeling poorly, does the washing for him and hangs up his clothes. She reminds him about little things that he might forget and always remembers to buy razors, vests and socks when he needs new ones. She takes very good care of him, just like Mama did. The man loves this." After a while, the man goes out and finds someone who wants to play doctors and nurses with him. Lack of communication and a lack of SDAs contribute to boring marriages. SDAs are spontaneous displays of affection, which occur mostly on the female-to-male axis. The woman is suddenly overcome by a sudden urge to hug and to kiss the man and to say something cute to him. Men love this. Sometimes they give it a whirl themselves. Unfortunately, men often misjudge the timing for an SDA. They try one when the woman has just spent half an hour putting her face on, or when she's talking to her mother on the phone. Her response can put off a man trying it again for quite a while. McKinley goes on to add, "In most relationships there is one who kisses and one who offers the cheek. Men tend to forget that if the cheek is in need of a shave most weekends, it is likely to come in contact with a few less kisses." Communication presents its own difficulties when it comes to talking about the intimacies in marriage. McKinley observes that women don't, because they A, feel a bit embarrassed, B, are scared that men will think they're sick if they make specific requests, and C, suspect that asking a man to do something he's not already doing might make him feel inadequate. Men don't, because they A, feel a bit embarrassed, B, are scared that women will accuse them of treating them like they're sick if they make a specific request, and C, would feel really inadequate if the woman asked them to do something they weren't already doing. Number 19 is brand new marriages. One of the loveliest opportunities in a marriage exists when the newly wedded allow God to rule guidelines on the clean slate of their married life together. Maybe it would be a good time for me to mention family planning. Family planning is not just about contraception. It is choosing the right person before the wedding day and being the right person afterwards. Number 20, bridging marriages. Vivian Tenney reveals a distorted concept of marriage in her presumably autobiographical novel, Just Ask the Lonely. Starting at age 16, she migrated from one marriage to another, seeking true love. Through her novel's lead character, she confessed, quote, "I always kept a string of men, and I went on from Charlie and Met to Crisp, always someone new to replace the others. Although I had loved them all, I had a lot of love to give, much more than one man alone could handle, so I needed the other, and Crisp was just another husband on my list." Number 21, brief marriages. These are marriages in which the newly wedded are on rocky ground. Described by Celia Egan as a romance novel in which the heroine dies in the first chapter. The Sydney Telegraph quoted Bill Cruse of the Sydney Wayside Chapel as saying, that the average marriage in Australia now lasts 7 years. When you don't know what to do, remember the biblical prayer in 2 Chronicles 20, verse 12. Neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee. Here's where the guidance of a Christian counsellor comes in. Proverbs 19:20 reads, "Hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in the end." Number 22 is brimstone marriages. From the monthly newsletter of a Sussex, England women's club, we read, "After tea, Mrs. X gave an amusing talk with slides on Babu, her pet baboon. She said that although some people were scared by such large, ferocious animals, she felt completely at home with him, having spent 15 years in Africa with her husband." Brimstone marriages may have episodes of excitement, but most often they are plagued with depression. Any marriage can have happy highs if things are kept in perspective. Pastor M. Blaine Smith said, "The key to enjoying the highs is learning to accept the lows. Depression can be a gift from God to help us emotionally let go of the past so that we can embrace His will for our future more wholeheartedly." Number 23, broken marriages, or rather broken people, because most couples married in the past 25 years are not now married to each other, according to Sydney City Mission Director Pastor Gordon Moyes. Most children of these marriages are permanently affected, and their own marriages will have a likely reflection of this insecurity. But I just love the refrain from the song which says, "When everything was brokenness and strife, God made something beautiful of my life." Number 24 is bubbly marriages. Well-known Swiss psychiatrist Dr. Paul Tiernier says, "To keep creativity alive, a couple need to have a cause to live for, something greater than themselves, something that will draw the best from them and keep them striving for a better relationship. For this reason, marriage means helping one another reach the full status of being persons. They communicate with each other, explore new ideas, seek a better relationship." True communication is not just small talk. Michael Argyle and Peter Trower tell us that small talk is like a Sunday scenic ride, goalless and undertaken for its own sake. Like the unplanned car trip, small talk can provide moments of great surprise and pleasure, but often ends up fruitless and boring. Number 25, building marriages. After a certain successful counselling session, Dr. Archibald Hart said of the couple, "Together they have begun to build a new relationship. Pretty soon, I suspect, he's going to fall in love with her all over again, and that's what a healthy love tends to do in relationships. It clones itself." One of the longest and possibly simplest love letters ever written was by Marcel de Lecour, a French painter, in 1875. His work of love contained one phrase, "I love you," written 1,875,000 times. This figures only a fraction of the actual number of times "I love you" was uttered and written in the course of this unusual letter. Actually, Marcel de Lecour did not actually write the letter, but hired a scribe to do it for him. However, in keeping with the scribal tradition, Marcel said the phrase out loud, the scribe wrote it down, and then repeated the phrase back to Marcel. Therefore, Marcel uttered the phrase 1,875,000 times. The scribe wrote it down 1,875,000 times, and then repeated it back to Marcel 1,875,000 times, for a grand total of 5,625,000 times before this unusual love letter was finally dispatched to his loved one. Number 26, bumpy marriages. The title of a book by W.W. Wershibi reads, "The Bumps Are What You Climb On." And one of the bumpiest things in a marriage is child rearing. Howard Hendricks, in his book Heaven Help the Home, mused, "People often exclaim in my office, 'I'm not competent to be a parent.' Frequently I jar them by replying, 'You're not supposed to be competent to be a parent. If Christ isn't sufficient for your need, I've got news for you, you've had it.'" The rewards of love and marriage become obvious to children just by observing their parents' lifestyle as opposed to their own. It would be hard to calculate the impact on a child of merely noticing that mum and dad sleep together in the same bed and I only have a teddy bear. One of Penelope Rushanov's friends tells her about a 3-year-old who recently asked her, "When I grow up, will I get to sleep with you like Daddy does?" Number 27 is bungling marriages. When you married in haste only to repent in leisure. Wayne Mack, in his book Strengthening Your Marriage, asserts that God's intention is that when two people get married, they should share everything. Their bodies, their possessions, their insights, their ideas, their abilities, their problems, their successes, their sufferings, their failures, etc. Award-winning writer Philip Yancey, in the book Where Is God When It Hurts, answers his own question this way. He has been there from the beginning, designing a pain system that still in the midst of fallen rebellious world bears the stamp of his genius and equips us for life on this planet. He has used pain even in its grossest form to teach us, asking us to let it turn us to him. He has stooped to conquer. He has allied himself with the poor and suffering. He has promised supernatural strength to nourish our spirit. He has joined us. He's with us now, ministering to us through his spirit. Number 28 is burdened marriages. The great preacher and evangelist Charles Spurgeon said, "The greatest earthly blessing that God can give to any of us is health, with the exception of sickness. Sickness has frequently been of more use to the saints of God than health has. If some men that I know of could be favoured with a month of rheumatism, it would, by God's grace, mellow them marvellously. I would not wish for any man a long time of sickness and pain, but a twist now and then one might almost ask for him. A sick wife, a newly made grave, poverty, slander, sinking of spirit, might teach lessons nowhere else to be learnt so well. Trials drive us to the reality of religion. Our afflictions come to us as blessings, though they frown like curses." Number 29 is burdensome marriages. The controversial authoress Joan Collins said, quote, "Love in marriage may be a dream, but a burdensome marriage is a nightmare. Burdensome marriages are those weighted with seemingly insurmountable problems. Sometimes it takes a storm to prove a shelter." Deborah McKinley observed that after a while people really get fed up with fighting. Sometimes they break up. Sometimes they sort things out with a spot of wooing. Sometimes they just watch a little more TV. Too often, too much thought is spent on the problem and not enough on the solution. Although Christ is more interested in our eternal salvation than he is in our immediate devastating circumstances, we know deep down that the only problem that is too big for God is the one that we withhold from him. I'd like to recommend what I call the 4A method of problem solving for burdensome marriages. 1. Accept that God is able. He promises that with God all things are possible. Matthew 19:26. 2A. Accept God's wisdom to face your problem. Read James 1:5. 3a, accept counsel from Christian friends. Ponder upon Proverbs 11:14. And 4a, act. Believe that God is able. Accepting his wisdom and good counsel, choose a course of action and then act in faith. I refer you to Hebrews 11 verse 8. And finally, number 30, business marriages. Novelist Agnar Mikkel says of one character, he never saw his father and mother exchange the slightest caress. And a vague idea was born in the young man that happiness in life was not assured merely by the husband having a good job with a pension and the wife knowing how to make good fish soup. Sadly, in many business marriages, the house comes before the home. The dwelling is of more value than the dwellers. The warmth of the heater is more important than the warmth of the hearts. A participant in a confidence-building course confessed, "Home was a beautiful house and an immaculate garden, but it was always my parents' house. I never wanted to bring anyone home, so I stopped going to other people's houses. I became isolated and shy." A 10-year-old boy asked, "What happens, Mum, when I'm 18? Do I leave this house or do you?" Ironically, Ogden Nash versed, "One would be in less danger from the wiles of a stranger if one's own kin and kith were more fun to be with." In the final outcome, improving your marriage can be summed up in the acronym GROTH, G-R-O-T-H. G stands for going to God in prayer daily, John 15:7. R stands for reading God's word daily, Acts 17:11. O stands for obeying God moment by moment, John 14:21. W stands for witnessing for Christ daily in your marriage and community by your life and words, Matthew 4:19 and John 15:8. T stands for trusting God in every detail of your life, 1 Peter 5:7. And H stands for the Holy Spirit being allowed to control and empower your daily life and witness, Galatians 5:16 and 17, and Acts 1:8. May God bless your marriage.